Welcome back at WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. It is positively one step closer to NFL draft day. But I tell you what, for many of these 27, 28 years now of Ravens football, we've had draft time and the Orioles kind of stink and they're not that interesting. Tell you what, they're not great, but they don't stink. And they're very, very interesting. We're going to be taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road next week on Thursday and Friday. We'll be at Captain Larry's down at Federal Hill on Thursday. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I had winners at Pappas in Bel Air the other day. The big winner was Mickey Coachella because he got free crab cakes out of the deal. We had a great, great time up there. Our friends also at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, all month long. Buy two, get two free, 5 years, 0% financing, and a good turn. Our friends at Adams Jeep are putting on a thing with Mike Bordick on May 6th to adopt out animals. So I have my Chesapeake Feline Association, and I'm here with fellow cat lover, cat owner, or do they own us? I'm not sure. Luke Jones joins us now to talk about those cats out on the field at Comiskey Park. I love Comiskey Park because sometimes they wear the Chet Lemon softball jerseys. They never wear the 71 throwbacks with the baby blue Aparicio and the gray. But at least it says Aparicio on the wall. Big Ben just absolutely looked down upon my family because Cedric Mullins is running the bases, kind of like Louie did. What's going on, dude? Oriole magic. Feel it happen. Every night there's a different star. That's the magic of Oriole baseball.
Yeah, a magical series win for the Orioles that on Sunday did not look like it was going to be. I think, and you heard Ben McDonald say this at the conclusion of Masson's telecast on Sunday after the 8-4 win, for his money, their best win of the season. And I think I agree. I think you look at how this game started. First of all, you have a long rain delay. That's always weird on getaway day, albeit it wasn't a long road trip or anything like that. But, you know, you're leaving Chicago after the conclusion of that one. Grayson Rodriguez really struggled in the first inning. You know, fastball command wasn't there, missing up, missing arm side, gives up a couple home runs. I mean, it's looking like it's going to be a really short day for him. And, oh, yeah, it's cold. It's dreary. It's a miserable Chicago weather in April kind of day. And you're going up against the AL Cy Young runner-up from a year ago and Dylan Cease. Those are not variables adding up to a series win whatsoever. Those are variables adding up to Cease throws seven innings and only throws 95 pitches and the Orioles lose 7-2. You know, that's just how that kind of game typically shapes up.
I wanted one cease and desist tweet out of me before the day was over. I never got a chance to do that one.
Yeah. Well, the White Sox 4-0 lead ceased to exist and the Orioles come back and win. And again, we saw it throughout the course of the series. Orioles hitters, how many times did we think back, even during the Buck Showalter era when they were winning games and even making the playoffs, and you would constantly see the Orioles go up against these other teams working deep counts constantly, drawing walks, you know, not making anything easy for your pitching staff. The Orioles slowly but surely are becoming that. And certainly you see it with Rutschman. Gunnar Henderson, even though he hasn't hit a whole lot to this point, he's drawn a ton of walks. You're seeing that with guys. And it's not as though they're lined up top to bottom. They still have some free swingers. They still have some guys that are a little more, a little more inclined to swing rather than take walks. But they walked a ton over the course of the weekend. And their ability to draw walks and to work counts and to drive up the pitch count, it's worked out for them quite a bit, and we've seen them have the ability to come back, and we certainly saw that over the course of this weekend series. You know, Adley Rutschman was the hero Friday night. You know, they lose in extras on Saturday, but to erase a 4-0 lead against Dylan Cease on a day where you were sitting around and it was really cold, I mean, it was about 40 degrees, that's a nice win. I mean, that's the kind of win that, you know, you don't want to make too much of it. It's mid-April. And this team certainly has things going for it and things that we can be concerned about. We can get into that as well. But you know, you win a road series when it's getaway day and you're down 4-0 in the first inning. Really, really easy for even good teams to kind of pack it in from that point mentally. And the Orioles, to their credit, they didn't do it. They kept battling back. And ultimately, they get the job done and they take a series as they come home now, even though technically, they'll be on the road this week as they have that quick two-game set with Washington.
Let's talk pitching. You know, I mean, we can talk about him hitting the ball. That's a lot of fun. Every night there is a different star, but let's just talk about stability of pitching. Let's talk about John Means. Let's talk about Grayson Rodriguez. Let's talk about DL Hall. We've been talking about these guys for a while. Means is an is if he comes back at some point, but where's the cavalry when half the guys in their 30s haven't been very good? They get a guy with a freak line drive. But more than that, the kid scuffling. The kid scuffling's a story, man.
It is, but at the same time, as much as he struggled in the first inning, for anyone who stuck with it, and I know, again, you can kind of mail it in even as a fan, and you're like, all right, I'll go watch the NBA playoffs or whatever. Grayson Rodriguez pitched really well over the final four innings. And look, I'm not excusing the first inning. He's got to figure out a way to come out of the bullpen when he's warming up and to start fast. I mean, he's walked the leadoff hitter, I think, in all three of these starts. So that's an issue, but I do really like seeing him able to regroup, right? Of showing some moxie. I mean, he's 23. Most pitchers when they're that
Keep
age,
pointing that out, by the way. I just got to keep processing what 23 is.
you have to. I mean, you have to. As much as we'd love to see him just take the league by storm and it's a Fernando Mania kind of deal, more often than not, guys are going to take their lumps, right? So again, I don't want to sit here and look at the final line and say, well, that's good enough. He'd be the first to tell you, I can't give up four earned runs in the first inning, but that game easily could get away from him. And then you're talking about, all right, they've got these off days. What's this mean for the bullpen? We saw the bullpen work a lot. They've worked a lot early on. And, the results in the pen haven't been great, as far as a ton of guys that you're counting on. So
Well, that's the
for him,
question for other pitchers and for Stoughton and for these other guys that, like, you don't want to farm them out. I mean, they got to pitch, they got to play, they got to hit, they got to be in the lineup, they got to get at bats. I mean, they've got to do all of that. And there is this, how much failure is too much failure? How much overwhelm is too much overwhelm? Can they bounce back? Is there resiliency? I'll give you that on Rodriguez, but it's a game they probably could have, should have lost. They won. So, like, they won the game, great, but he's got to give him a better chance early on, for sure.
well, I mean, he does, but who can't you say that about right now? I mean, to your point, Kyle Gibson, this last start aside, had been pretty good. So I don't know if I'd throw him into that mix quite as much. But I mean, Dean Kramer's looked way more like the 2021 than 2022 Dean Kramer, and that's been a problem. Cole Irvin, as we talked about in our conversation late last week, sent to the minors because, I mean, it's not the results are one thing. He's walking guys, and that's something. He had a career walk rate of 2 per 9 inning, per 9 innings entering this season. So, is it a mechanical issue? Is it some kind of a physical issue that he's kind of battling through? He's got to figure that out. Not that you didn't expect Cole Irvin to be your ace, but there's a reason why they acquired him to eat innings and be a guy that raises the floor of the rotation. They haven't gotten that from the veterans, to your point. Kyle Bradish should be coming back this week. Could see him in Wednesday's start against Washington. He had a rehab outing. Keep in mind, just had a foot contusion, so not something that you would expect to impact his ability to pitch. But they've got to figure it out. And certainly Grayson Rodriguez has to figure out a way to be better in the first inning. But again, if it had been the opposite and he pitched four strong innings and then melted down in the fifth, I think we'd be talking about it probably in different terms. But the fact that he regrouped and pitched so well, the way that he did after that first inning, again, he's got to figure that out because that was part of the narrative of him in the spring. He was having one rough inning that was kind of blowing up his starts.
But this is also a guy who's been injured. It's a cold day. It's a re-warm. I mean, it's just,
It's a
it's
lot.
not a good recipe. I mean, but we knew that in March that there would be games in April that would look like this.
Well, and again, that's why I'm not trying to be overly optimistic. He has to be better in the first inning, but at the same time, the fact that he regrouped to the degree that he did, I mean, he finished with 8 strikeouts, so over 5 innings. That fastball command in the first inning, he was up, he kept missing arm side. I mean, that was a major problem, but as the outing continued, that changeup, which we'd heard so much about as far as that being really his best secondary pitch. His slider's really good too, but that changeup had really been the pitch that has really made him, kind of developed, transitioned him into this not just a good prospect, but a special prospect, a top five, top 10 in all of baseball kind of prospect over the last couple of years. It was the changeup. And we saw that on display after the first inning or two, where, getting lots of swings and misses, getting some called strike threes. That was good to see. So, yeah, he's got to figure it out. But again, I look at him compared to the rest of the rotation and Are we going to single him out? And I'm not saying you, I'm just in general. Are we going to single him out just because he hasn't been here as long compared to other guys that have more experience? And they're
well,
not
he's
getting the
clearly
job
one of
done
their
either.
top five right now, right? And the ceiling is top one in the league. That's the ceiling, right?
Yeah, I mean, the ceiling for him, I mean, we could debate where it is as it relates to the rest of baseball, but he certainly has the highest ceiling of any pitcher in the organization. So that's where I said, even after his last start, I'm running him back out there. Now, I was concerned to see him give up a couple home runs. You know, the Gavin Sheets home run. It's not like that ball was demolished, but certainly he got a breaking ball in a bad spot, and he paid for it.
Well, he didn't come out of warm-up with great stuff, right?
Yeah. I don't think it was the stuff as much as he just wasn't commanding it. I mean, again, he couldn't locate his fastball. He was throwing hard, so it wasn't so much the stuff. It was he didn't really know where it was going, and he kept missing arm side and up. So, you know, he adjusted as it went on, as the outing went on. And again, over the last four innings, he was really good and gave them a chance to climb back in the game. And they needed that anyway because of how short the bullpen was. I mean, we saw it. Austin Voth pitched the eighth inning. This is the first outing Austin Voth had all year where he hadn't given up a home run. So not exactly your typical high leverage eighth inning guy there, but that's, you know, that's what Brandon Hyde was kind of dealing with on Sunday. So, you know, he knew he had Batista for the ninth, but getting to him, right? Stretching that chain long enough to be able to get to him. So that's where I think it was huge for Grayson Rodriguez. And let me also give a tip of the cap to Mike Bauman, who pitched really well. And we've talked a lot about the bullpen early on. And, you know, they've been missing Dylan Tate. They've been missing Michael Gibbons. So it's not like they've had their full assortment of relievers, but Bauman is the one guy who, you know, had been a prospect, starting prospect for them in the minors, had some great success, also had some injuries, some inconsistency, and, you know, kind of made the transition this spring to say, okay, we think you can be a, you know, one inning, but sometimes two inning reliever for us. And he was big for them. Those two innings, I mean, that was pretty critical for them to get to the late innings. And again, give themselves a chance to not just come back from a 4-0 deficit, but take the lead the way that they did. So that was good to see. He's got a pretty small ERA right now. Again, we're still in very early small sample size territory in mid-April, but, you know, maybe he's the guy that, I'm not going to say he takes the Felix Bautista leap from a year ago, but maybe he is a guy that emerges and becomes a little bit more of a high leverage guy for them as the year goes on. Because, you know, again, it's great to have Batista for the ninth, but you have to get to him. And we even saw last year after they traded Jorge Lopez and Batista moved into that role, he did great as the closer. That wasn't the concern, but it was a little more of a challenge bridging the gap, right? You know, being able to get to the ninth inning. So you need guys that can do that. So it was good to see Mike Bauman give them two innings the way that he did on Sunday as well. So yeah, the pitching, that's this series win aside. I mean, it's great to win a series. I still have concerns about the pitching. There's no question about it, but you'll take having concerns if you still find ways to win series in the meantime, right? You know, we know that it's an ongoing 162 game marathon that's going to have peaks and valleys, and unexpected things happen. Good things will happen, bad things will happen, but, you know, they're finding a way right now. And, you know, 9-7, it's not anything to do cartwheels over, but they're keeping themselves right in the thick of things, at least the best they can, with Tampa Bay doing what they've done so far to open the season in the AL East. But again, the pitching, that remains a work in progress. There's no doubt about it, but I'm going to continue to run Grayson Rodriguez out there for the time being. And, you know, I think the Orioles agree with the way that they sent Cole Irvin to the minor leagues. You know, Bradish is going to come up this week. He'll come off the IL. So we'll see him back in the rotation, and then we'll see how it progresses from there.
Keep pitching Rodriguez till he becomes a star, till he becomes an ace, I guess. Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next week at Captain Larry's on Thursday, Friday at Fadley's, then at the Old Lexington Market, still there. Had a great time at Pappas. A lot of people out. Mickey Cicchello was there. Friends stopped by. All sorts of people stopped by. It was great. Big appreciation, everybody who won and made it fun. We're going to be around all week previewing the draft. Luke's going to be around getting ready for that. We'll be doing more OBJ. But in the meantime, I just want to say this with the baseball team. Dude, it's, you know, it's tax day. It's a week and a half. It's still cold. Yeah, you know, they haven't played two homestands yet. Like, the whole thing, I'm trying to figure out just on a player by player basis, like Cedric Mullins gets the post game interview, and Mountcastle's a star, but it didn't hit the ball well over the weekend, and Rutschman's their best player, and where are we with Hay? Trying to figure out what these guys are going to be when they average out, and I think it's easier with position players than pitchers. Just talk about the ups and downs of the Dean Kramers. But what about the ups and downs of Ryan Mountcastle? There are times he looks like Dave Kingman, and there's other times he looks like, I don't know, something better than Dave Kingman. I don't even know what to say about that.
Yeah, and I think we've come to kind of expect that from him, right? I mean, even going back to when he made his major league debut in the weird, truncated 2020 pandemic season with no fans and all of that, we've seen him, he'll go through 2 or 3 or 4 weeks at a time, and he looks like one of the best hitters in baseball. I mean, he's raking, he hits for a ton of power. We know he's going to strike out. At times, he can draw a stray walk here or there, but for the most part, doesn't draw many walks. So that kind of limits. I think that limits his ceiling as far as his overall offensive profile. But
It
I mean,
moves you
my
from a
goodness.
Kingman to a Gorman Thomas, or what?
I guess it depends on the era, right? I mean, certainly he's got a lot of swing and miss in his profile. He doesn't walk a whole lot, but he's got power. And the one thing I will say, and we talked about this a lot last year, we talked about the second half of last year, as fun as it was for the club. We saw Mountcastle and Austin Hayes really struggle after the All-Star break. But this is where I will, and I'll be a little nerdy here. So full disclaimer, I'm warning you. But when you do look at some of the Statcast numbers, exit velocity, they've got, they have so much batted ball data that's accumulated over time. They can kind of tell you based on, where the ball's hit, the launch angle, the exit velocity. They actually are able to calculate an expected batting average. Now, I'm not going to bore you with all those numbers, but the
No,
point I'm
they can
trying to,
do that, and now they know there's no shift too.
well, there's that too, and that's certainly a factor as far as changing the game with balls being put in play. But
It ought to add 20 percentage points to somebody's batting average, right? At least.
no doubt, especially a lot of lefties hitting to the right side. But in the case of Mountcastle, my point is so much of that data said, yeah, look, we know what the numbers were in the second half last year. They weren't good, but he really hit into a lot of rough luck when you look at how quality the contact was overall. Doesn't mean he was, it doesn't mean he was great, but it just means it wasn't as bad as maybe just the standard numbers looked. So the point I'm trying to make is I think there are a lot of people that thought, okay, he'll bounce back, and we've seen him have a good April again, as you pointed out, cooled off at in Chicago, but that's kind of what he is. We've talked about Rutschman. Look, I mean, this guy's better than he was last year, and that's saying a lot because he was already really, really good after about the first 3 weeks last year. So, he's the best. But, you mentioned it. I think it's interesting because we spent a few minutes talking about the pitching and the ebbs and flows, and Grayson Rodriguez is here now. What's he going to look like a month from now? What's he going to look like 3 months from now? DL Hall will be in the mix at some point in time, whether it's in the rotation or back end of the bullpen. Again, time will tell how that's going to look. John Means, they're eyeing a July return for him. So you've got some upside. You have some different guys. So, cavalry, I don't know if that's the right term, but along those lines. However, I will say even offensively, keep in mind, you have Colton Cowser at Triple A Norfolk right now. You have Jordan Westberg at Triple A Norfolk right now. You have Joey Ortiz at Norfolk right now. You have Kyle Stowers, who began the year on the major league roster and got optioned because he wasn't getting enough at bats. Whether people want to agree with how the Orioles were handling him or not, that's where he is right now. My point is, even with the guys that you're talking about, and okay, it's easy to say Adley Rutschman's your starting catcher because he's an all-star quality player, maybe an MVP quality kind of player, but whether you're talking about a Hayes who's off to a great start, but what's he going to do over the course of the season? A Santander, Adam Frazier, who I wasn't a big fan of that acquisition because of the infield depth that they have down below that's coming. My point is, if guys don't perform, there are guys at Norfolk waiting in the wings that aren't just like quad A type guys where you just plug them in, like Ryan O'Hearn, which they called him up here recently, but they have like legitimate, former first round picks and former high draft picks that are
I said
guys that
they
are
would want to get at bats for if they brought him up. They wouldn't want to
exactly,
ride pine. Right.
right. So the point I'm making is all of these guys really, there's no one that you just pencil in and say, well, you're going to get 500 or 600 plate appearances, no questions asked. I mean, They have to produce.
Somebody's going to hit 320 at Norfolk if you're hitting 210 here, period.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And, you know, just to pick on one guy as an example, look, Anthony Santander, he's got a longer leash than some of these other guys. He's been around a few years now. So, you know, the fact that he's sub 200 right now, I don't want to make too much of that. However, they do have other outfielders coming. And by the way, another guy I'll throw out there, not imminent, but Heston Kerstad is healthy. You know, their former first round pick from a few years back. We know everything he went through. Absolutely destroying double A pitching. So I don't know how long they're going to be able to keep him with the Bay Sox until he's up with Norfolk and you know, getting a chance to see how he does against triple A pitching. So, you know, the point is, trades can be made, roster moves can be made, you can shuffle, and we've talked a lot about the potential for trades. So, you know, this is a roster that definitely has imperfections or some question marks here and there. There's no doubt about that, especially on the pitching side. But the point is, the roster that began the season is not necessarily going to be what finishes the season, even talking about your typical starting nine on a nightly basis. So, you know, there definitely is some pressure. I mean, I think Austin Hayes is a great example. I think I mentioned this during spring training. Look, Austin Hayes has been around for several years. He's one of the longest tenured guy that they have, you know, made his major league debut in 2017. But he's someone that, considering some of the other options they have in the outfield that are coming, you know, this is a pretty pivotal year for him. So I think it's really good and important for him that he's off to a good start. Now, he has to continue that. And part of that for him has been health over the course of his career. So, you know, the point is that I think does make things exciting for the Orioles is, yes, they're 9-7. That's not great, but they're right in the thick of things. And they're winning games with their offense primarily right now. But, you know, this is a roster that has room to change if it needs to. And I mean that for the better. Even with the potential to make some trades at some point between now and the trade deadline. So I think that's what's exciting, because I think even though we have questions about some of the players that we mentioned earlier in our conversation, you do have upside and you've got more potential coming. So, you know, that's where it is fun. And, you know, not that I expect the Orioles to be a juggernaut this year. I never expected that going into the season, but when you have so many young players and so many options, I think there is some excitement knowing that this team, if all things, if they stay reasonably healthy, should be, just like they were last year, should be better at the end of this season than they are right now, talking about them in April. And 9-7, they're hanging around. You know, they're winning series and finding ways to win games, even with some of their imperfections, certainly on the pitching side, and even the defense, which has certainly been shakier than we would have thought going into the season.
Much like the Odell Beckham Jr. news, there is breaking news with Lamar Jackson or any of the Oriole players going up and down. You get it first on the WNST tech service. All are brought to you by Coons Baltimore Ford. I'm wearing my Coons Baltimore Ford baby blues. And, you know, I go back to the 70-71 Aparicio card before they went Dick Allen with the red pinstripes to that sort of Wilbur Wood, Goose Gossage sort of Bill Melton look. But Bill Melton wore the baby blues. Dude, they came out Sunday in those Greg Luzinski, Lamar Hoyt, fat guy, post softball, 83, skinny Harold Baines, Ron Kittle, like that outfit. Look, man, there's the Astro thing that sort of jumped the shark. You know, the Enos Cabell Astro thing, that's fine. The Bob Watson, good. Julio Cruz, good. Jose Cruz, excuse me. Julio was let me take you on a sea cruise. Jose, it's a Berman thing. Anyway, those Sox uniforms, fantastic. And as a guy born in 1983, do you puke when you see those or you like those?
I think I like them. It's funny, you rattled off all the names. I mean, as much as we'd say Harold Baines here, I always think Ron Kittle for some reason, right? I mean, and I know he was an Oriole for a minute much later in his career as well.
Well, only one of us attended game one of the ALCS in 1983. One of us was busy being born that week, so, right?
That's true. I was born right before that. I think I was born on the final day of the regular season, I believe.
You were 1 week old when Tito Landrum made a name for himself.
Exactly.
I know it.
Exactly. But you know what? Just your general point, and you know me, I'm a little bit of a uniform nerd, hashtag fashion tweets, as I always throw out on Twitter. I much prefer seeing teams with the throwback threads more so than the City Edition that, you know, and the Orioles are going to debut theirs later
Dude,
this
my
year.
cousin pooped on the Padres, and she's Miss San Diego, loves San Diego State, the whole deal. You know, my cousin, she played tennis at Arizona, but she's a San Diego girl. She's like, we deserve to get beat wearing those uniforms. I mean, like, they were awful. They're awful.
A few of them are decent. I actually, the White Sox have, theirs are all black with white pinstripes, and it says what, Southside on it. Those are one of the, you know, theirs is one of the few that I say I can live with that one. Most of them, I'm not a big fan. I mean, it's just give me the throwbacks. I would much just, and Chris Pica, our good pal, will appreciate this comment because I know we've talked about it before. But rather than the Nike City Connect or whatever, I don't even, City something, City Edition, whatever it's called, I'd much rather see a 1966 Orioles throwback uniform they wear for Sunday home games. I'd much prefer that than, you know, a city, and I'm sure, I'm guessing it'll probably have the Maryland flag involved or something like that. I mean, and maybe, hey, let's hold out
It's
hope that it doesn't.
military. It's blue. It's pink. It's orange. It's
Maybe it'll be
green for
okay.
St. Patrick's Day. It's,
Yeah.
you know, like
Too much.
just put something good on. The Orioles have had every, other than the Yankees and the Tigers, and maybe the Dodgers because they don't change anything. The Cardinals maybe, but like every other team has enough decent something. So, somewhere the Mariners have a Bruce Bochy and a Ken Griffey throwback. You know what I mean? Like the Padres have five versions of that. The White Sox have eight versions of that because Bill Veeck was a whore. So no problem. Just wear them and wear them with dignity and don't bastardize. I don't need you to look like you're going George Jetson on me. We're not reinventing the wheel here. We're really not.
Although I will say, here's my fun theory on what the city version could be. Could it be the 1971 all orange, you know, Brooks's Sporting Goods store, you know, where everyone said Boog Powell looked like a giant pumpkin? Could that be the city one?
Dude, it
I, you know.
disgusted me to hear Jim Palmer last weekend during the Yankee game rag on the orange jerseys. Not that specific 71 thing. He hated the orange in general, like in the 79 World Series and stuff. So, Palmer, you're wrong. Again, you're wrong. I just want to point that out.
I mean, I look, I love Palmer, but that's one
He
opinion
sold a
I
poop
disagree
load
with,
of
right?
underwear for Jockey for wearing that orange, and he should know it. If Cosell were alive, he'd tell him that. Luke, we're gonna talk some football around here. I know it's gonna be a busy week as we head into the draft. We got OBJ, we got all that going on. The Orioles continuing that big rivalry they have with the Washington Nationals this week as well. I will be around. That's at BaltimorePositive.com. Luke is Luke at WNST.net. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next Thursday and Friday. That is draft pre at Capitol. I have a lot of crab cakes for me. I'm going to have a crab cake before the draft and a crab cake after the draft. We'll be at Fadley's the morning after the draft next Friday as well. Can't get Springsteen and the Eagles and Earth, Wind, and Fire every week, but some weeks you can get Adam Sandler. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.